JR, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
Super excited to have you here. You are a different type of guest than I normally invite to the show, but I think your insights and experience can add a lot of value to all the advisors listening. Can you share a little bit about your back to get into tax and estate work as a lawyer?
Well, my background is I've been a lawyer in Calgary here for 41 years. I've practiced just about every area of law. At one point, I left practice of law for a period of time and started up an investment fund that focused on acquiring closely held businesses and trying to capture value in those closely held businesses and then selling them and the fund was sold to professionals that couldn't realize on their capital gains exemption through their own corporations. So when I came back to the practice of law, it was in 2004, I came back to practice law. I had a better understanding of what owner managers go through, the trials and tribulations. And I realized that the successful owner managers, the clients that you and I see every day, they are 1 in 100. The odds of them succeeding after 5 years are about 1 in 100. So they are really the people that beat the long odds by starting up a corporation and trying to make it successful and trying to make it profitable. And somewhere off the future there, 15, 20 years, they actually can come to you and say, let's figure out how we build some wealth here and how we pass it on to the next generation. And let's figure out how we survive this corporation for the benefit of employees, for the benefit of customers. So that's kind of my focus right now. It's business succession, personal succession, tax planning, and estate planning. And they kind of all work together. And maybe you have this experience too, but the owner managers that I deal with, and I deal with them over a long period of time, until we actually get to a point where we can pass it on to the next generation or employees or to a third party purchaser, those people have become friends. And so it's a really kind of a special practice that when you can have clients that are friends. So that's my background.
Very cool. Yeah, absolutely. You can't have this high trust relationship where you're talking about their money and their estate and their, what they want to have happen with their businesses without, building a fairly strong bond. So absolutely. I'm really curious about your experience acquiring closely held businesses. Any interesting things you saw in that experience?
Oddly enough, it's mostly transferring closely held businesses. But there's lots of acquisitions we do. I think from a vendor point of view, the challenge is to have your corporation optimized. And you can't do that in a day. You can't do that in a month. You can't do that in a year. If it's not optimized, you're not going to get the best price out in the marketplace. So I think the biggest challenge for owner managers is to realize I have to have a succession plan here to pass these businesses along. Have your house in order, everything in order. So planning is a long-term exercise, and it's one of the most difficult exercises that an owner manager goes through during their business career. So a lot of it is putting in place business succession plans that are evolved over a course of 3 to 5 years to optimize this business. There's no businesses that's fully optimized, right? So that's the challenge for owner managers. Make sure you can be a profitable business, but are you really an acquisition target for a third party purchaser?
What can a financial advisor do with their clients who are these owner managers and that we can see don't have the succession in place? Like, how do we effectively put the file together to pass off to a lawyer like yourself and work in conjunction with the lawyer and the accountant and everybody else that needs to be part of the team, whether valuation specialists and so forth?
It's all about knowing the entire information of the business and the family and the individuals running that business and understanding what are your goals. Do you have goals? What are you going to do with this business? I had a guy in here yesterday. He's probably got a $2 million tax liability sitting over his head. And he's saying, I'm just going to shut my company down and lay off my employees. That's not a plan. It's a solution for him to walk away and go golfing. But how does that affect your customers? How does it affect your employees? How does it affect your family and things like that? So not knowing what your goals are is a real problem. You have to have goals. If you don't have goals, you don't know if you're going to accomplish them, right? You've got to have those goals and some plan to get to those goals. So a lot of owner managers, and it's the nature of owning a closely held corporation. You try to start it out up and you're wearing all the hats, right? You don't have time to think about business succession and goals and that. You're just trying to survive that business. And then got a call from a client the other day. I can't make payroll tomorrow. What am I going to do? Right? You're not thinking about how you're going to pass that business on to your children or your employees. You're thinking about, how am I going to make payroll tomorrow? And you do that for a long period of time. And somewhere along the way, when it's successful, then you get to come and talk to you, a financial advisor, or me, and maybe your accountant, about, how do we survive this? How do we pass it on? How do we build wealth here? How do we pass the wealth on? How do we do it tax efficiently? And it's not until that time, that they start asking those questions. And then they probably don't even have a good structure to start with. They didn't think about good structures when they started out. They went and got a corporation and paid a dollar for their shares and then crossed their fingers and worked hard. Right. So they're just, it's lack of planning, but it's understandable. People come and apologize to me about, why did nobody tell me this? Well, why wasn't I thinking about this? Because you were doing other things. You're trying to make this thing survive, right? So people think that they come to us and we have some magic wand. We do have to get owner managers and their businesses into the right structure to be tax efficient and to allow them to achieve estate goals, but they have to be successful, profitable to start with, or there's nothing to work with. If they can't survive the thing, there's nothing to work with, and that's what they focused on their entire career, right? So it's you and me and the accountant working together. That's the most important thing at that point in time when they've realized I am successful. I have built value. I do have something to pass along. How do I do it? So all the advisors have to work together. I can't do what you can do. I can't do what the accountant can do. But we have to have free communication, and we have to have a client that's will allow us to do that. So tax planning and estate planning and so on is maybe not for everyone, because some people, like my client here yesterday, just don't want to do it. They just don't want to do it. It's too complicated.
Yeah, how do we help clients be, I guess, overwhelmed or make it easier for them to go through the process and make them, not run away from it?
Well, it's building knowledge for them. It's building knowledge for them and making them understand, we can pass this along to the next generation, but there's going to be a big tax bill. How are we going to get rid of the tax bill? And the problem we have in, in this country is, you know, in 1917, government enacted a tax act. It was less than 4,000 words. Now we have a tax act that's a million words, right? So that's what we deal with every day. You know, that my client yesterday says, I don't want to pay any tax. And I said, well, we have to do planning. You know, so we are in a tax regime. So we have to do some structures here to allow us to do things tax efficiently, to allow us to achieve succession, to allow us to survive businesses. Right? So it's complicated. For me, it's just an exercise of sitting down with clients and just building their knowledge slowly. You know, if we're doing a reorganization of a corporation and calls for an estate freeze, for example, which is a very common way to reorganize corporations and get them to a place where they're going to be passed along. Well, I'll provide quite a detailed memorandum to the client, and then I'll walk them through it. And this is not intuitive for owner managers, right? You know, they're entrepreneurs. They're not exposed to tax planning every day. We have to build knowledge for them. And it has to come from all the advisors. It just can't be, you know, some lawyer just holding it all in and trying to explain about insurance and trying to explain about, you know, what dividend rates are and so on. And that's the problem. I mean, there's lots of barriers put up by lawyers and accountants, and they want to do the whole piece. And they'll tell you, yeah, I want to do the whole piece. I think the best quarterback in these scenarios is the financial advisor. A good financial advisor that has good contacts with other professionals, they're the best quarterbacks.
How would a financial planner choose which lawyers and accountants to work on these particular, because there's, you know, just like any other profession, there's so many specialties and as you said, the whole team has to be rowing together. And sometimes you get clients who have professionals on their team already that may or may not either have the expertise or may have a completely different opinion or approach to solve the problem.
Right. So I think kind of the right people for this area would be not litigation lawyers, because they really don't know about corporations or commercial transactions. So I think you want to find an experienced corporate commercial lawyer that's experienced. Maybe that's a tax lawyer or has some tax expertise. There's lots and lots of accountants out there. You've met all kinds of them. The majority of them, in my experience, receive information from the businesses and add up the numbers and file the tax return. And there's no proactive approach at all. I've been able to find over a course of years, three or four very good accountants that are tax planning, estate planning, business succession focused. And they just, they go beyond just adding up the numbers. I'm sure you know lots of financial advisors as well that are don't have any expertise in those areas. So you know, you got to just line up with a financial advisor and accountant and a lawyer. It's a trial and error exercise. I think I have a very good allegiance with a couple of investment advisors that are quite knowledgeable about corporate tax, personal tax, and estate planning, and we work very well together. And I don't step on their toes. I believe in insurance and things like that, but I don't know anything about it. I mean, I understand why it's there. I don't add up numbers. For some reason, some accountants want to do legal documents. I don't know why, but it doesn't turn out very well. But, you know, it's trial and error. It's really difficult to find those right people, and the people that want to work. I don't like this word very well, but collaboratively, right? Work together with you and not step on your toes and understand, you know, I know nothing about financial advisor, wealth management. I don't know anything about the marketplace. There are experts, and I want to put my clients in the hands of the experts. I don't want, you know, I deal with lots of accountants. I want to put them in the hands of proactive accountants that say, you know, this is what you can do, as opposed to just taking the numbers, adding up, and filing a tax return and sending an invoice out. And they see their clients once a year. So get to know your clients and get to know their advisors. And if their advisors aren't working out, you know, talk to them about possibly. You have lots of, as financial advisors, you have lots of exposure to accountants and lawyers and other advisors. So, you're as an experienced advisor, you can make those judgments and make recommendations. I think the downside to that is sometimes it doesn't turn out, and you're judged by the referrals that you make.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. What are some questions that an advisor can ask a lawyer, for example, to know if they would be a good fit for a business owner to go through the tax and estate pieces of their?
A couple of things that are, you know, tell me about your experience. What's your practice focus? What kind of clients are your ideal clients? How do you work with them? All of the things that I think you ask your clients already. You know, who do you work with and what's their expertise? Can they check all the boxes on the legal side? Can they check all the boxes on the accounting side? Can they check all the boxes on the wealth management, wealth building side? It's a difficult process. They just don't come to you. You have to go find them, right? So being active in the business community is very important. You're doing,
maybe you're doing ongoing podcasts like you're doing, or you're doing presentations.
That's a great place to meet other advisors and you sit down with them, say, how do we work together? How can we work together? So I think those are things that you do, certainly things that I do. So you build good relationships over the years through that process.
Have you seen or been a part of any financial advisors who are themselves planning for their succession?
Yes. No, I do that. I do that too. It's a little somewhat challenging to do a proper structure, but it's possible. One of the structures that I do is, there's a classic structure that we've been putting in place for years and years and years that we call a triangle structure, and putting it in place, it depends on where the investment advisor is in their career. You know, how, again, they have to have goals. What's your investment, or what's your retirement horizon? And picking the sweet spot on getting a proper structure in place. So the structure usually involves a holding company, an operating company, and a trust. So those three together, and we just have to realize when we're dealing with a trust, it has a lifespan of about, it's 21 years. They can go beyond that, but we have a deemed disposition at the 21st anniversary. So you have to understand the goals of the investment advisor. What do they want to achieve? And it might be, you know, somewhere along the way, it might be, I want to protect my assets. How do I do that? You know, I've built some wealth for my business. How do I protect my assets? And that might be, okay, we'll put in place a trust, we'll do an estate freeze, we'll put in place a trust. Eventually that trust will
operate corporation. And there's a little tricks when it comes to investment advisors on how you set up a trust. But,
eventually that trust will own the shares of the operating corporation. So right away you've got asset protection. And then you have a holding corporation that is connected under tax law, connected so that dividends can come from the operating corporation up to the holding corporation on a tax-free basis, tax-free in corporate. So you take your excess, you want to make sure your excess assets in your business are isolated from the risks associated with the operation of your business. The second benefit to that structure, being able to take excess assets, passive assets, out of the operating company and getting them into the holding corporation, is you then have the opportunity to sell the shares of your operating company and realize on your lifetime capital gains exemption. So there's certain criteria you have to follow there. And a holding corporation, a connected holding corporation and a trust allows you to do that. And then, you know, if you've built a lot of value in your operating corporation and it's, you know, the value shares are owned by a trust, then the capital gains exception, which applies to individuals, currently it's $913,630 that you can take away tax-free on the sale of shares, applies to individuals. But under the Income Tax Act, a trust is an individual, so you can multiply the capital gains exemption across all the beneficiaries. So, you know, proper structure is key to all those things: business succession, estate planning, personal succession, and tax efficiency, and asset protection, which is, you know, part of all of
it. Earlier, you mentioned the business has to be profitable in order to warrant starting to look at all of these things. Is there a sweet spot in terms of, like, here's the number, like, here's what the retained earnings needs to be before it makes sense to embark on this restructuring journey?
To me, it just has to be a successful business and have owner managers that have built some wealth. And maybe that wealth is sitting in the operating company. It might all be in the operating company in the form of passive investments, you know, portfolio of publicly traded stocks, and so on. But there has to be something to work with. And if it's not, you know, in the first instance, if it's not profitable, it's, you know, it can hang around for a year or two, but then it's gone. So there's nothing to work with there. You know, you want it to be an ongoing profitable business. I never say, you know, you have to have X, Y, or whatever amount of retained earnings or profits after tax. And a lot of these businesses are, you know, you take a financial snapshot, you can't really tell how what they're worth in the marketplace, because you might have to normalize management salaries. I mean, they may be taking way more out of a corporation than a normal manager would take out of a corporation. So you optimize and try to figure out, you know, really what is this thing worth? And then, you know, if they've been able to build some wealth and have a desire to protect it and pass it along, and then think about structure. I say this to people, there's lots of, over my career, lots and lots of entrepreneurs have come into my office and said, okay, what do I need? What do I need to start? I would never say to them, you know, put a family trust in place, put a holding company in place. I'd say to them, have you ever been in business before? If the answer is no, I'd say, okay, probably the best vehicle for you to use is a corporation. Go over here. They sell cheap corporations, right? You can get one for $500. And you know, work hard. And if you're successful, please come back. And when you're successful, when you have some goals, then we'll put a structure in place. But don't spend your money on structure now.
I'm gonna push a little bit. Like, how do you know when the corporation is successful enough? Because I think both advisors and a lot of business owners that I work with, they're like, oh no, I'm not, you know, big enough or profitable enough, or you know, we kind of downplay our own success.
Right. Yeah, I'd like to see a business around for 5 years.
Okay. Okay.
You know,
if you've been able to survive it for 5 years, you got something happening.
Now, you got some business smarts, and you've got some grit, and so I will say this though, there are people that come into the office and say, okay, well, I'm starting this business. And they say, well, okay, have you ever done it before? Yes, I have. What happened to that business? Well, I sold it for, $10 million. Okay, this is the structure you need right here, because you're going to be successful. The number one indicator for success in business is prior success in business. So if somebody comes in and says, I've been successful already, well, let's do it from the beginning. Now, you do have to think about age of the entrepreneurs. If they're young, maybe it's not, maybe you don't need a trust unless there's a real focus on asset protection. Mm-hmm. Because, if you have an individual as a shareholder of a corporation and they get sued, then the judgment creditor can seize their shares and get down into the corporation and its assets to realize on that judgment. But if you're holding your shares, your operating corporation in a trust, and you get sued as a beneficiary of that trust, creditor can't do anything, right? So you've got asset protection there. So some people actually put structures in place purely for asset protection reasons. Some people, in other jurisdictions, and your jurisdiction is one, BC, there's probate tax in BC. And so if you own any assets, capital assets on your death, there's going to be probate tax. If you put those assets into a trust, no probate tax. Right? So, jurisdictions like BC, Saskatchewan, Ontario have probate tax. There's no probate tax in Alberta. I think it's when you make an application for a grant of probate, the fee is $425. That's the maximum. Could be a billionaire, it's $425. So that's a consideration. Just as an aside, you can do that when the owner is 65 years or older. You can transfer assets, for example, shares of operating company into something called an alter ego trust. And you could do that on a tax deferred basis, so the transfer doesn't attract tax when you transfer in. The rules are the base rule is that all the income that comes out of that trust during the lifetime of the owner has to go to the owner, can third party. And then there's a tax event when the owner passes. So what you're doing is you're doing two things. You're deferring that 21-year rule until the owner passes, and you're protecting the assets on the way through from creditors, and the trust itself is a proxy for the will, so it's much more efficient to pass assets along through a trust. You don't have to make an application for a grant of probate. You don't have to go through all the rules and duties of an executor to administer an estate. So there's lots of good reasons for putting a trust in place, but it has to be done at the right time.
Right. And so it is a depending on the size of the business, the circumstances, the success of the owner who is starting or operating that business, how long they've been around, their age, like all of these things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And family too. I mean, these structures are less valuable to business owners that are single or to business owners. I came across one last week. And, it's two different owners, one in BC, one here in Alberta. And, I said to her, why aren't you putting in a trust? I don't have any successors. None. So there you go. So if asset protection is not a thing, and, maybe you don't need a trust.
Yeah, I suppose if there was any philanthropic goals, as you said before, there have to be goals for the business owner to take this kind of action, and the goal could be like I want to reduce my cost or tax implication, or it can be that I want to leave more effectively to some successors, whether family or
otherwise. I should say that some of the benefits of having a trust have eroded over the last 4 or 5 years. Back, you know, when I first started putting trusts in place in 1981, 82, you could almost do anything with those things. So you could have a trust owning shares of a private corporation and generate dividends from that private corporation and reallocate them to the beneficiaries. And you could have a 1 day old baby, you know, making 20 grand tax free. So, I mean, you know, it's patently unfair, right? So starting January 1, 2000, put in place something called Kitty Tax. And then Kitty Tax was, if you're generating dividends from a private corporation and allocating them to minor children, so children under the age of 18, then you're taxed at high marginal rate, which at that time was 39%. Looks pretty good right now, actually, because we're at 48%. And so time goes on, and then starting in January 1, 2018, I put a new regime of taxation of private corporations in place, called TOSI, Tax on Split Income, which is exceedingly complex. But again, we moved the age of Kitty Tax up to 25. And the reason for that was, notwithstanding, you know, between that those two periods of time, 18 years, you know, we had children that turned 18, and we spent, we put them through university, we paid all their expenses for a period of time before they're out and on their own. So CRA did a study to see where these dividends were going from private corporations, and realized that these children from age 18 to age 24 were receiving dividends during that time period to go to school. So that's why TOSI went up to age 25. So TOSI is, takes away advantages for our trust, but we put them in place because there's still lots of other advantages. And, there was one thing that happened back in 2017 as a lead up to putting the TOSI rules in place. Finance introduced a proposal to take away the capital gains exemptions from trusts, and they backed off of that because they had 22,000 comments from advisors on the proposal. So, and it really didn't accomplish anything, because you can take the shares of a trust or the assets of a trust, and you can transfer them to your capital beneficiaries on a tax deferred basis. So, you know, yeah, it's just another step, and we're still going to get the capital gains exemptions anyway. So, I don't think they thought that one through. And yeah, TOSI didn't apply after age 65. So maybe have a spouse in there as a shareholder along the way.
Right. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, and lots of technicalities, obviously, when you start getting into the mechanics, and exactly why, like, you need a team of people working on it, the advisor with a lawyer, an accountant who specialize in this type of work is an absolute must. Like, it's impossible to handle without a good team that stays on top of all of the changes and that has extensive experience. It's not something you dabble in, I guess.
It's not something you dabble in, but building those relationships are going to enhance your business. You're going to get referrals from those people. They're going to start trusting you. You're going to start understanding you're a very knowledgeable person. And you can help their clients, and you know, you're going to get good referrals, because the people that lawyers are acting for are successful owner managers. The people that accountants are acting for are successful. Not all of them, but many of them are successful, but haven't done any planning. You know, I have actually about 3 weeks ago, I had mom and dad in here, successful business, and what investments do you have? Well, we don't have anything. I said, well, what happens to your profits? Well, we just keep them in our operating company. But you haven't invested, right? They're just in cash.
Cash.
Cash. You know, so getting a 0.25% interest or something, like, I don't know what it is now. But, you know, losing money every day because of inflation. So,
sure.
You know, no plan at all. And that actually, that was a referral from an accountant to me. And then I referred it to an investment advisor because we need that money into something that makes sense, that, you know, it's going to build some wealth. Anyway,
what did the accountant in that case see that made them realize, you know, this couple needs to talk to a lawyer?
Yeah, what's all this cash doing in your bank account?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Why is it there? You know, that's like this big number, $500,000 of cash. And I think you just ask the simple question is, how much do you need to operate? 20 grand a month. So that's all passive assets. And guess what? If you get sued, it might be gone.
It's all available, yeah.
Well, available for the creditors, so... Build those relationships. They're important.
Yeah, really cool.
You never know where your next referral is coming from. You know, I get them from somebody will phone me and go, I talked to that guy 5 years ago, you know, and they somehow they remembered your name, probably said something quite smart. I'm referring to you, of course.
That's awesome. Any closing thoughts? We're getting close to the end of our time.
Love what you do. I say if you love your job as a financial advisor, and you're building friends through your clients, you're building relationships with other professionals, and down deep you're surviving businesses and allowing people to achieve their goals. That's something good, and that's easy to wake up and every morning and look in the mirror and say, yeah, I got to get into work. It's going to be fun today. So if it's drudgery, go find something else.
Yeah, for sure. And the more you find good people, good teammates to work with in other professions, the more fun the job becomes because the client is getting a better experience. So thanks so much for joining us today and sharing your experience on succession, and I think it was all very relevant to both advisors on behalf of their clients, but also advisors themselves in their own businesses thinking about succession, because I'm not sure what the stats are, but it is not, you know, 50% of advisors are prepared for their own succession. It's a significantly lower percentage than that. So
we know that there's not a lot of planning by adults in Canada, because more than 50% of all adults in Canada do not have a will.
Right. And that's just the first step.
Absolute first step. I mean, I had someone in here the other day and said, they were 64, 65, I think they were. And I said, do you have a will? Okay, we don't have to talk about anything. Go get your will done first. Then we can talk about this, because it's going to be a mess if you don't have a will. So, you know, there's some very fundamental things you do right at the front end, and then you can get into the planning. Again, planning's a long-term exercise. And, you know, from investment advisor point of view, it's always a good question to ask, do you have a will? If you don't, like, let's get this. They're relatively inexpensive to put in place anyways. You know, get one in place, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, it's you can never remember and remind about the idea of asking clients whether they have a will enough, because it's even if we ask it and the client says they're going to do it, they come back a few weeks or a few months or a year later and they say they still don't have it. So, yeah.
One thing I maybe just add at the very end here is being a true wealth manager might involve educating the next generation on how to receive wealth and deal with wealth. That's a really big one. Parents tend to hold all that information close. I do have a client, now this goes back a few years, but very successful, mom and dad very successful, had net wealth of $50 million, had two sons, And the son, one son was a plumber, one son was an electrician, and the sons just thought mom and dad were poor, and they not a clue. Not a clue.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, mom and dad are going to pass away, and then there's going to be $50 million. Now, how do you deal with that? You know, there's no introduction to lawyers, no introduction to accountants, no introduction to investment managers, investment advisors. So that's also quite an important exercise, I think, for investment advisors, particularly when there's multi-generational wealth. Wealth that's not going to be used by mom and dad.
So don't assume that the family is already set up and everybody knows what's going on. I mean, this is a pretty extreme example of $50 million household, and the kids don't know. Yeah.
And they were doing things like, I tried to talk them out of these things, but they're doing things like, okay, well, when we pass, then all our wealth will go into a trust and our children will get the first chance when they're 55. You know, no, just give them some money now. They're trying to own a house. They're trying to build family and build their own life. So there's those considerations. But as advisors, keep asking questions and be interested in asking questions and ask the right questions too.
Yeah.
I'll shut up now.
No, that's awesome. Thank you. Thank you again. Really appreciate your time. Look forward to maybe having you back down the road.
That sounds good. Thanks so much.